This is Kate Harness with 307net Radio, and today I'm joined again by Superintendent Charles Olsky of Johnson County School District. Hello, Charles. Nice to see you.
Good morning. I'm glad we're back.
Yes, we're back. And today we're going to talk about well-being and safety of students in the district across the whole district. And it seems that there are so many more unusual and maybe extreme threats and so on that a school district administration is having to conjure with every day above delivering good education to students as they come to school every day. I think, you know, the things that are in the news that people are aware of are things like, for example, mass shootings, but we also know that people get stressed and they react maybe in extreme ways, and that can be difficult to handle. Or maybe, just as happened this week, a hoax bomb threat at Meadowlark School, which seems unthinkable when you actually pause about it. But
this is a great opportunity to talk about what we have in place and what's happening around the district. Let's use Wednesday as an example. First of all, I don't feel I'm in a good place by saying, I'll just be honest. We live in a world now where this SWAT or this mass email that goes out nationwide is, you know, focused on a couple states, that there are people out in this world that really think it's funny to cause what I would consider panic, and why they do that, I don't understand it. But I am very grateful for the fact is we have safe schools here, and we've been putting a lot of things in place.
So to be clear, the school district received an email of a bomb threat.
We did, and how they went through. So we weren't the only school. You know, one tends to a couple schools. We managed that. You said it was a Meadowlark thing. You know, but they went out to all schools statewide. Mm-hmm. They went to districts. They went to hospitals. They went to a lot of different places. So how do we react in that situation based on the training that we're doing? Because the situation that took place here, once there was an email that was recognized, within 10 minutes, we had law enforcement called. I was even remote. I was on the side of the interstate. We made calls. Our teams came together. We decided whether it was a real threat or not. Schools will go into what's a stay put. Do you identify? So, you know, the fact is we paused. It wasn't like hours and hours and hours that we were waiting. That with law enforcement, with their contacts with DCI, knowing that this is a hoax, making sure kids were safe, it was really a fascinating process. And that comes back to, I know we do the active shooter with TAC-1 training, but it's not about active shooter. This is a great example of how we respond. So that's what comes out of some of our trainings is, what do we do, how to respond, making sure we know all the facts so that we don't create panic. I'm not going to mention the school districts, but some others didn't react this way, and they evacuated kids, had parents upset because of the process. But when we have law enforcement involved like we do, we had administration that was able to pause and see, knowing that our schools are locked down, then knowing that we have cameras, knowing that we've done TAC-1 training, with our focus on safety and how we react, it just really mitigates some of these threats that come in, especially these big, nationwide threats, where somebody just sends a hoax email out, that we're doing some good things as a community and as a district to protect our kids. Law enforcement ramped it up for after school to make sure there was nothing there, to show that the community, that our kids are safe. Johnson County is a great place to be. Not a lot of school districts or schools around the nation have the support and the communication we have. So when you have Sean and you have Rod and you have administration, and again, I want to reiterate.
You're referring to our sheriff and police chief.
Yes, sorry. Calling him by name, so that must mean I have a relationship. So that's good. When you can bring something together, once it's truly been identified as a thing, is within 10 to 15 minutes, we were able to know whether it was a viable threat or not. We had already put systems in place. What are we doing? So kids and the safety of staff is always important, but more importantly, not creating a panic, making good decisions, because when you create panic, more negative stuff comes out of that than really being focused. So, I need the community to know that I, as a superintendent, appreciate the fact is we have a community that cares. We have law enforcement that respond. We've done the trainings that at least gives us an idea. We came back and we did a what did we learn from that situation just here at the district office. What could have been done different to make it even better? So reviewing on those, and that's the terminology we're using now. It's not what did we do wrong. That's this whole culture building that we're trying to rebuild as a district is we're all humans, but what do we learn from every situation? So that's a new terminology by regrouping and staging afterwards. What could we, what did we learn? And from that, is there anything we can change? So that hopefully reassures the community and the stakeholders that we do want to do what's best for kids and staff. You know, all those little things from gathering transportation to make sure drivers are going to be, can be getting up and ready to go if there's a response, and where did we take and how do we do things. All those little things that might seem like it's really simple, but gathering those up and putting them in the right direction, who's going to communicate, one channel of communication to the community of the parents so everybody's going in the right direction is all a critical component of situations like this. So they might get whoever the sick person is who thought this is funny to put out. I can honestly say from my point of view, we're getting stronger. And as we grow from this, it's not swept under the carpet. It's like, it's just another one of those things, not that big a deal. No, we take it seriously. So in a situation like that, the more we reflect on it and the more we try to grow from a situation, the better we're going to be for the safety of staff and students.
Thank you. And as you're explaining all of this, I'm thinking, yeah, I need to title this this feature as protocol and partnerships, because that really seems to be what it is, that you had a protocol in place, but you have partnerships that stretch out broader than, you know, just within the boundaries of the school district. Is that usual for a school district to have that?
Yeah, it's typical, but honestly, I think it's stronger than I've ever been familiar with in 35 years. You know, coming from kind of a rural community in Wright, there was always that little bit of partnership. Sheridan 3 were obviously very remote. But my 15, 16 years in Campbell County, there was a relationship, but not like it is here. So I think it's common. It's based on, it's that question is based on your community and how involved they want to be. And, you know, from the Wright Road to everything that we do with law enforcement, the training with TAC 1, I'm going to say we're exceptional compared to most.
Thank you. Another aspect of safety, and you know, sadly, this is something that we've become almost inured to, is school shootings, mass shootings. Say, mass shootings often seem to take place in schools, not just in sort of other public places. And there's similar protocols and preparedness for that, I assume, and that you are, you know, every time something like that could potentially pop up, you treat every incident as seriously as this?
Yeah, so there's protocol, and so this is a great time to go into that. That's that collaboration with emergency services. So if there's a scenario in a building where students' health or safety is involved, we call what they call stay put, because we don't need a lot of kids observing or you know, just watching that scenario. So if you were to drive by and see emergency services outside of a school, doesn't necessarily mean there's a threat or an emergency going on that's related in like a mass shooting, or we have some things like that. We're just taking care of our people.
And stay put, is that literally that in the school, everybody just stays in the room?
So you just stay in your classes, and right. That's a great question. So you just stay in your classes, you continue on instruction. We're protecting the if it's a health or safety issue among the individuals till we can get them out. You know, again, controlling the panic of what's happening, but realizing that personnel are doing their job.
And so how does a stay put differ from a lockdown? In a lockdown, do doors actually lock?
So in a stay put, lockdown means that you are in a room and there's some type of major emergency going on and you need to be aware of what's happening and how you're going to react. In a stay put, you know what? There's a situation happening. We're just going to continue education. There's not a high level of threat that's happening within the building. We're just managing a situation to protect people until you know, a bell rings. The last thing we want to do is if there's something happening in a hallway that we don't need to expose students to, that's non-threatening in a situation. We'll just continue on with education. We'll make the environment safe. We'll allow, in some cases, school personnel to our team of people, whether it's a crisis team or whether it's just a principal or a counselor dealing with somebody, just to keep them out of that environment till it's under control. Or it could be emergency personnel coming in. There might be something that an ambulance has to show up for, and we're just protecting the rights of protecting people in such a way that services can be provided, but we still continue on with education. So that's the main difference. When there's a lockdown, we're practicing, for example, like your active shooter situation. When there's a stay put, that just means we want kids to stay in their classroom until things are cleared, so we're not interrupting or causing a panic, or 300 kids at a high school moving into the hallway where we're trying to address the situation. So it's just more of how do you control the environment in such a way that you're protecting the rights of students and staff, or just keeping it safe for everybody, or not exposing them to something they don't need to be exposed to.
And how do you choose when and what do you say through a text or an email conversation out as a group announcement to parents? So I don't mean to an individual parent, I mean to everyone.
So that's still a balancing act. So here in Johnson County is a little bit different, but social media has created something different. So since I've been in administration since 2006, it's a whole lot different now that we have cell phones and people are driving by and saying, here's a scenario. So just use an example. So if we have emergency services, say an ambulance at a school, and people are driving by and they see visual, well, the first thing everybody starts doing, what's happening at the school? Well, is everybody safe? So then, we just kind of have to decide at what level, what is out there when we post things out to the community. So parents, you'd be surprised how many parents, before the situation's even over, it's already on social media, a misperception of what's happening. So we always want to let parents know that when we have the correct facts and it's truly something that has already been through social media, we will be there, we'll communicate that. But really trusting the fact is we're always going to have the safety of the kids and the staff first priority. But before we go out with a communication piece, we also want to have the facts and we want to make sure what we're saying. So when we go out and simply say, hey, things are safe I'll just use a school for example. We'll just say Buffalo High School. Things are safe at the high school. Things are good. It's just to reassure parents that we do have protocols in place. We're just taking care of kids. If it was truly a threat situation, again, we have to monitor, adjust, and then we would go out to parents of what that looks like. So that has to be determined at the level, at the building level of what you see outside. We've had situations here where law enforcement had to pull up to outside of a building. They did have their lights on, but again, it wasn't a crisis situation. However, all the cars that drove by and the kids that seen it through the windows, we had to mitigate some of that. So we even changed that process after that situation. So how do we communicate? How do you pull up with emergency services? And that comes back to that collaborative piece you're going to talk about, is we all grow from each situation. But keeping individual safety of kids and students in mind is always our priority. And being able to have the collaborative teamwork that we have with emergency services and the school district is really, it's pretty special, to be honest with you.
So do you actually do a formal review of some sort of each incident and look at, unpack so, what you feel went well and what you feel...
So I always do a follow-up. So a building administration, I'll call if this is a scenario or this is what went out, that got communicated. So there's always that communication. With this last one, I'll use an example. We did. As soon as the next day arrived, I brought everybody here in the office together. We did a debrief. What did you learn? Because Murphy's Law kicks in place. So what if Charles is gone? So what if the next person in charge, Steve, is gone? And the next person in charge is Connie, who happened to be with me. So then what does that look like? Where's the chain of command? I was fortunate enough to be on cell phone, so I asked them to come together as a team. I was able to give instructions. They all did everything they needed to do. I was in conversation with law enforcement, and I was in conversation with the school leadership. So all of that correspond, but again, we all were doing the same thing because we had a short come together. What do we really know? Is this really a crisis? And if it is, what are we going to do? I was the one that called transportation as soon as I got it. So within a 10 to 15 minute window, we had decided, okay, this is, we're safe. Everything's good. We need to get a chain of communication out because we know that this was sent out multi-states. I already had, Connie had looked up that schools had got them earlier that day. Some even got them at 8 o'clock in the morning. They had already evacuated school. That had made news. So we sent a communication piece out because I already knew that social media had been publishing these things. So we just all wanted to be on the same page.
And do those communications, those email and text alerts, which as a parent, you check the box as when you enroll your child as a student in any of the schools, do they go to individual school parents or do they go to everybody?
So there's a section in there that goes to board, parents, students. So when we do it out through PowerSchool, you register and you click that you want to receive these emergency notices. So yes.
So if you're a parent like myself, for example, I have a child in the high school, but it's an incident in Meadowlark. Am I receiving that information too?
If the person sending it out feels it needs to be a district-wide thing, yes.
Right, okay. Thank you. So we're talking a little bit there about external threats of things that happen, you know, from somewhere random, an unfamiliar situation. What about those things which may be perhaps more commonplace, which are threats from people we know, from sort of inside our system already? Maybe it's a student who's feeling, you know, particularly troubled. How does that work? If let's say, for example, a teacher or another student, you know, becomes aware that somebody may have written a list with names on it, and "I'm going to shoot you all" is next to it, what happens?
Well, that triggers a series of events because it comes back to what I'm saying. Safety of students and staff is always number one. But what is fortunate with what we have that a lot of districts that are our size or smaller don't have is we have a threat assessment team. So internally, so we have several people that can do a threat assessment to see if it's valued. We can get law enforcement involved. So that triggers lots of events. But you've also heard us talk about the SEAS program, and I don't want to misspeak, but that a social emotional educational piece is there's a program, there's refocus rooms, there's protocol in place, teachers get training. And again, some of those things, there might be a stay put because maybe there's a situation with a student that they're just trying to get them into a room where they can process where they're at before we start having kids go up and down the hallways. So a lot of those things are dependent on the situation, but as a community to know that what we've put together with the SEAS team is we have a behavior specialist that works when we have counselors that work with them. Not only do we have a SPED counselor, but we have counselors in each one of the
schools. SPED is special education.
Special education, yes. Charles will someday remember all this, but special education. so we have a team of psychs that can do threat assessments along with counselors and different things. So we have an internal team that helps with that, with processes. And in some cases, we have to have annual training, which is required for special ed or just some of those things. That's why we brought Josh Varner back, just for our counselors within our schools, how we deal with that social-emotional piece and how do we react or how do we respond. We want to respond, not react. So there's a lot of trainings that go on. And with that being said, all of this is going along with everything that a teacher is required to do to maintain a class and be on track to make sure they're ready for their state assessment. I mean, it is a huge carry for our teachers. So to have that support team there that can help them with that management of situations like that, and I'm going to throw in the school nurses. Sorry, I have to clear my voice here, but let's not forget about our school nurses. We have here in Buffalo, we have two nurses that, you know, are very readily available. I know they spend half days at different buildings, but all you have to do is call them. And they're there to help with that piece. This is where I also come in. That is why I am so excited about our parent liaison pieces. When kids are struggling or families are struggling, it's not just, it can be anybody. It can be any family that has struggles to have continue to build those programs to support those kids. So not as only is it internal, but that parent liaison through, you know, Compass is again that collaborative piece with community organizations to really try to do what's best for the kids, the parents, and the community.
And if you remember, we actually sat down and talked about that, and there's another there's another segment on 307net Radio about parent liaison and the program. You've been in education a long time. Have you noticed...
But I still look young, right?
Yes, you do. have you noticed a difference in young people over the years? Are they changed in some ways as a kind of cohorts? There is a sense that life is more stressful and more challenging for young people than maybe it's been before, that childhood is shorter and maybe not as innocent as it was previously. Do you think that that's a fair statement?
Absolutely.
What would you say are the contributors to that?
Well, society has changed. I mean, but things were different in the 80s as it was in the 60s. So, I mean, if we look how society changes over time, but we live in a world where a 35 years ago, so now I'm labeling myself, we didn't have concurrent dual enrollment, kids graduating from high school with 30 credits, you know, and moving on to college. There's that, how do you be successful? So when you talk about they're growing up faster or being required to mature, okay, so we have 18-year-olds that 20 years ago probably didn't have 20 to 30 credits with high school in advance and what that looks like. Well, that brings pressure and stress of how do you balance those days. Activities, you know, just those things when we bring activities involved. There are kids that are involved from 3:30 till 9 o'clock at night in a lot of different things. The way we teach now is different. People said, well, when you bring technology, when the computers were going to hear, we're going to be a paperless world. Well, that paperless world I disagree with, because I think there's more paper than there ever was. But the real truth is that there's more accountability than there's ever been in a virtual world. So people can access things, there's accountability, there's growth. Our accountability system, our kids live in a world, when I went to school, you never heard nothing about how important it was to a state assessment, because it was just ACT. You know, your high school diploma. Now it's all about you have to be performing. We have state report cards. Schools are graded. Schools are based on their performance levels. Well, that all trickles down to kids. And then you get COVID, and then you bring a whole nother platform into where we're at. We're also in an economy now that it costs more than it did to live and to make ends meet. And so those things that, you know, we used to be able to do, we can't do now. So there are a lot of stresses. And then just keeping up with the Joneses. And I use this reference a lot. Sometimes we're always trying to keep up with the Joneses. And in this teenage world, the kids themselves aren't different. I think just around them and how they're reacting and learning and their responses is different. We have Google now. When I grew up, you had an encyclopedia, or you went out and you got your hands dirty and you learned until you got it right. Okay, so now we have access to more information than we've ever had. That means we have access to what's happening in other countries, other cultures. You know, and we know social media impacts how we react to things, right? So it creates a fear in some cases, and not, I think there's a fear out there, where are we as society? And our generation of kids probably is more adaptable to that than we are as some of us in this place. But again, it's still, it's a little different. Everybody talks about this. You'll see a lot of kids texting to the person that's right next to them, so that form of communication is different too, right? How we communicate. So we're all at fault, because we never had these that carry our lives around.
And you're holding your phone, yes.
I'm holding my phone up and saying, but I can't say this is a bad thing, because schools don't buy phones. We all purchase them, but our world does revolve around these or some form of technology. And now we're throwing AI into the mix. And so it's a lot different world. Are kids still kids? Absolutely. But I think what we're seeing with kids is as a result of an 18-year-old 20 years ago is in a different environment than an 18-year-old is now.
Are you concerned about youth and their emotional and mental state?
I'm going to say, yeah, that's a very common... we always put a picture on that we know where we're at and how we're doing. But we come from an amazing community where there's a lot of support, a lot of protection, and once you get outside into the real world, it's a little bit different. There's always that phrase that came across that we got to be grateful for what we have, but life is not fair. And that social emotional piece is understanding life might not be fair, but it doesn't mean that we can't be successful. And so that is social. We are a microwave society that we want to win. We want the best. It has to happen in 30 seconds. When some of us, it took a year to get where we were. It took 10 years to get where we were. So some of that social emotional piece. However, through you and my interviews with the Buffalo High School students, and just my interaction with kids, we got some resilient kids. So I want to put out there, when I say that, I don't mean that our kids, that I do worry about them. But when I get interviewed by a group of students at Buffalo High School, that we got some pretty good kids. Okay, so there, sometimes we have to remember kids are more resilient than we think they are. But we can't just say, oh, they'll be fine. We have to make sure we're there to support them if they need to be supported. When I go through the elementary and you see smiles, hugs, and whether I'm now referenced as Ho-Ho or Mr. Oski, and, you know, their lives are still going on. They're excited to be with their friends. It is. The middle school, they're going through a transition, and you walk through, middle school kids are middle school kids. So we still have kids being kids. But they are living in a different world than we were 20 years ago.
So kids may be resilient, and even the most resilient kid may have a moment that they stumble. What is the school district's general approach to kind of helping those who are actually really finding it a lot more difficult?
Again, very fortunate we have a counselor in every building. We have programs that we put in place. You know, Jen Skaggs with her work, with the programs that she's pushing out, you know, in collaboration with community resources. So our counselors are doing amazing things when it comes to that. What we're trying to do, again, with Compass, with even the parent liaison, it's just our people are trained. Our CEES program people, what I call the, in some cases, the dream team, when you have a behavior specialist and you have school psychologists and you have a counselor that's willing to do what they're doing, where we have a focus. There are supports within the building. Sometimes you don't get to see those out in the community, but I feel really strong. The stuff that we have going on within our buildings to support kids is pretty strong.
Thank you. Well, Charles, thank you for taking a moment and talking about things that are not necessarily about education, but undoubtedly impact education, because the frame of mind and the sense of well-being, emotional, mental, physical, with which a student sits in front of a teacher is really important.
And just to add another side note, so what happened, and I unfortunately was in Cheyenne during that time, but our Red Kettle Drive that happened, which has turned into a very competitive piece, that's a community collaboration that the first year we did it was $700. The next year we ramped it up, and between building principals and board, there was a little competition. So we raised $4,000, and now this year we raised $7,000, all to support this community. Really shows that's something special that not every community does.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I don't think we're seeing each other again before Christmas, but Merry Christmas to you. Happy New Year.
Merry
and I
Christmas.
Look forward to talking to you again.
All right. Thank you. Merry Christmas to everybody.